And welcome everybody to episode 56 of the Pause Up podcast. And you know, we've had a lot of guests on the show over the years that come from all different aspects of the world of FIU, right? We've had athletes, we've had coaches, we've had alumni, we've had Billy Gill, we've had pretty much everybody. But now we get to include another part of FIU athletics today. First off, I'm Jake Gibson. Alongside me are my friends and co-hosts, Kevin Burrell and Jonathan Mayer. And with us today is Papa Panther himself, former president of the FIU Alumni Association, the man who's seen and done it all at FIU, none other than Eddie Ondal. Eddie, how are you doing?
Doing great. Super happy to be on the podcast. As you know, we were talking before we started that I listened to the podcast, especially I've heard all the myriad number of guests from Scott Carr, Raja Bell. I remember you had Mike Biamonte on. When I get to hear you guys interview some of the athletes I may normally not get to hear from here through your podcast. So I think this is phenomenal. Glad to be on with my fellow Pause Up brethren, the three of you. A little bit younger than me, but still glad to be on.
Younger, maybe, but still, we all share our love for the university, whether we are in Eddie and myself, alumni of the university, or of course Kevin and Johnny, who are still students and doing great things, I hope, with their classes at FIU and all experiencing FIU athletics together. So, Eddie, let's get right into it. Let's talk a bit about becoming the FIU legend, per se. So, you know, we often ask student athletes on the show the first time they started playing their respective sport growing up. For you, Eddie, I got to know, when was the first time you ever stepped foot on FIU's campus? And when did you decide that it was a school you'd really want to attend?
Well, in my situation, think about it. I graduated, my undergrad is from the late 80s. So I for me, in the 80s, FIU had just become a four-year school in 81. Mm-hmm. I graduated, oh my God, I'll date myself on this one, but I graduated high school in 82. FIU had the hardest entrance requirements. Why? Because when they became a four-year school, Tallahassee really budgeted them for, like, think about this when you guys see the incoming freshman classes now. So they were maybe budgeted for a freshman class of about 250, 300 kids, and they'd get 5,000 to apply. So it was a really stringent entrance requirement to get into FIU. I was an okay student, nothing special. So I went to Miami College, at the time Community College route, now they're a four-year school. But I did that in a year and a half. I never had an option to go away. I was working since I was 14. So an option for me to go away, my brother had gone away to Florida. I didn't have that same option. I stayed here, and my only option, the only school that was there for me was FIU. And the moment I walked in, the challenge that was given to me academically was pretty stout. I mean, I found the education to be really, really good. When I speak to my friends who had gone to other schools and I would compare what they were studying to what I was studying, I realized, wow, this is a pretty special place. And I'm pretty loyal. I'm a pretty loyal guy. Since FIU was there for me, I was there for them. And I was, mind you, I started FIU, we were a Division II school. We didn't become Division I to 86. And at that, it was called Division I AAA, not AA, because AAA was schools that are Division I with no football. Division I AA was, they had football, but not at the Division I A level, Division I AA level. So we were Division I AAA. So imagine, so I would still go to basketball games. I would go to baseball games. I would go to soccer games. In my era, I saw a national championship in men's soccer. I saw phenomenal baseball teams under Danny Price. I mean, really good, stout. There was one year, right after I graduated, actually, there was one season, I think the people across town had just won one of their college World Series, and we were playing them in a five-game series throughout the year. And we, that year, after their winning all the marbles, we beat them 3 out of 5. Nice. We beat FSU 2 out of 3 at FSU, and we played Florida a one-game game, and we beat them as well. We were the only school to beat the back then called the Big Three in the same year. So we had some really stout baseball teams. Hopefully that repeats with Coach Witten. And now that we have football, couldn't be happier.
No, I do feel exciting times are ahead for FIU, and happy we're all going to be there to see it. So,
agreed.
I don't know how Billy Gill keeps getting himself on these episodes, like mention-wise, but I got to say, he shared a perspective on what FIU was like the decades ago when he was a student. And I just want to know your side as well. How drastically different would you say the university is now compared to when you were a student in terms of two things, in both scale and notoriety?
Okay. Well, perspective. So when I say my undergrad years in the 80s, FIU had 14 to 15,000 students.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Perspective. So back then, our crosstown folks, Miami, maybe had 12,000. So it wasn't that different, you know? Nowadays, we have, 58,000?
Something along those lines.
They're still, I guess, in their 13, 14,000 realm. So I've seen that type of growth. If I'm going to equate FIU, I'll put it in an artist perspective, right? So think of the 70s as you're the easel, the actual physical easel, and an artist stand. That's the 70s. So that's the base. My 80s year, we were the primer. We were the ones starting Greek organizations, starting clubs. When I was a junior at FIU, there were 30, 35 clubs and organizations, including Greeks, at FIU. Now there's 700. So when I say the 80s was a primer paint, everything from the 90s on to now is color. It's color and depth, and that gives you a perspective of how we've changed. From an easel, the stand, to the primer, and now the explosion of color, making us a full-run university.
Wow. Yeah, for sure. I do want to ask you, during your time as a student, what did you see regarding, more student life on campus, and then kind of what made you decide to kind of develop it into what it is today? Obviously, I do believe there wasn't any housing at FIU. I think
there was not
your time, but what was the campus life back then?
Well, I mean, obviously you always had the involvement when the Greeks were starting to develop. You had maybe three or four organizations that then became national, a couple of them. You start to see some of that. You would see that perspective on campus. The beautiful part about being in that time of year, I'm a certified scuba diver. There wasn't a scuba diving club at FIU. So the 80s were one of those things that, hey, I got together with a couple other Panther knuckleheads like myself. I said, let's open up a scuba diving club. We presented to SGA and got funding to start a scuba diving club. And that club went on for 15 years. I don't think it exists anymore, but it got pretty big at one point where actually they were called the Scuba Cats at one point. So it was a fun time because if it didn't exist, you made it exist. And that was one of the fun things. So you had to take the initiative. You had to go out there and make things happen. And obviously now it's much more traditional. They did build the first set of dorms, the one that are 107, right by where they're building the new engineering buildings. Those are maybe 300 units max. And there were some fun parties that were had there, I recall. But nothing like now. I mean, it's a paradigm shift for what you see now. It's another world.
Those are what now? University apartments, right?
I think they're university apartments. I think that may be one of the areas of expansion because remember, with FIU being land strapped, everything has to go up. Everything has to be built higher. So we got to take advantage of those spaces that that may not be utilized the most efficient way and redesign those spaces so we can continue our growth. I mean, we're going to only get bigger. We're only going to get bigger.
Yeah, exactly. I want to ask you, obviously you go through your time at FIU and you end up becoming the president of the Alumni Association. Just how proud of you are you just looking back at your time as the president and what it's turned into now? You have the Pause Up Tour. You guys went all the way to Orlando. I know when they faced UConn, the football team went up against UConn. There was an alumni event over there. I mean, the Alumni Association has grown into one
big
of
time.
The teams at FIU.
Big time. I'll tell you. One of my most proudest things about this university of what we've done is the fact that I'm a little older, but the fact that, and we were talking about it before, the fact that I'm a member of about three or four different chat groups that are made up of pretty substantial group of alumni, many of which are very successful. And we talk about FIU sports and all things FIU. And I see myself in a network of professionals that all share the same passion of FIU that I have. from a time when I first got involved with the Alumni Association, when I was pretty much the only dude screaming from the mountaintops about FIU, at a time where, again, we didn't have football, we didn't have a law school, we didn't have a medical school, and you didn't have that enthusiasm, that zealotry that I've always had. And now to see so many others beside myself that joined me in that, you know, pushing the FIU brand throughout, not only South Florida, but throughout. I mean, I know folks that live in other cities, Chicago, Indianapolis. My company that I work for is based out of Indianapolis. And I have alumni that live there, and they're always repping the FIU swag. When they go around, they have that pride. And now we have chapters all over the country. The development of the Alumni Association now under Sarah, who's a phenomenal alumni director, is just great, great things to see. It's only going to get better, by the way.
Yeah, and obviously there's another event next Wednesday at Funky Voodoo Hour. So hopefully everyone can come out for the Pause Up Tour. But what I want to ask you, and you have it in your title, Papa Panther. That's an unbelievable nickname to have. I want to know, how did you get that nickname, that moniker, and kind of it's been sticking to you, you know, till now?
I was a member of the board of the Alumni Association back. I mean, literally when I graduated my undergrad in 87, by 88, by 1989, I was already involved with the university, and they asked me to be on the board. And back then I was only 24, 25 years old, and I was asked to be on the board. That job eventually became that position, you know, was a volunteer on the board. Eventually, when the position of alumni director opened up, I really literally had a career change. I was in IT. I was a programmer. I was coding for Florida Power and Light, but I was so involved with FIU, the opportunity arose for me to be alumni director. And somebody goes, hey, take the jump. It's something you do it for free. You might as well get paid for it, you know, as an administrator. So I became the alumni director. I obviously, as alumni director, you know, started the first chapters, you know, helped start football, the whole nine yards, fought for the law school, that type of stuff. The a subsequent alumni director after me, a guy named Bill Drawn, one day sees me in all my different involvement, and he just looked at me. He goes, man, you're like the Papa Panther. And we all like, whoa, and I liked it. And it stuck. And I wear it as a badge of honor. People in my job know me as that. I walk around the community and I love it when people recognize me as that. For me, it's a badge of honor. I wear it with tremendous pride because I'm really proud of being a graduate of the school.
You're muted, Johnny.
Yeah, you're good.
I was going to say, I call you Papa Panther. That's
And I love it. I love to be called Papa Panther. I love it.
And so I want to ask you a little bit more about, you know, your involvement. Obviously,
sure. We
see all the time. But talk to me about your involvement now, whether, you know, it's going out to games, you know, different alumni events. What are something that you still do at FIU just to keep the name there, keep supporting the brand?
Well, it's funny now. My wife is more is I'm now the plus one now. My wife is a member of the board of trustees at FIU. I am part of the Honors College Dean's Advisory Board, and I may join the foundation board in a couple of years when I'm done with my term with the Honors College, which I love doing. I love working. I mean, when you look at the quality of the students we have in the Honors College, boy, I got to tell you, it just fills you up with pride when you see the quality of students we have in the. So I'm involved in as much as I'm all about sports, and I am. Mm-hmm. I really, really, really. Really push the academic side, but I always keep athletics front and center for one reason. Athletics, at the end of the day, could be a major branding tool for the university. Example: if the four of us were to walk around and talk to a bunch of college sports fans, and ask them just general, what do you think of? Do you think UCF or FAU is a more developed university than FIU? I would say most people, because of their success, UCF in football and that little run FAU had in the Final Four. Yeah. A lot of people say, yeah, they've got to be ahead of you guys. I go, well, academically, no, they're not. Academically, we smoke FAU. They're not even a Carnegie Research One school. I mean, they may become that eventually. We've been that for years. Everything UCF does, we've got more research dollars. We've got a law school and a medical school. They don't. what we're doing in research, whether it be the what you heard about the cancer research recently, all that type of stuff. We are top level university. But what happens? We haven't won a natty. We haven't gone to the Final Four. When those type of things get in the way, it sometimes takes back some of the branding opportunities you can have. That's why winning becomes super important for our major revenue sports. And hopefully we'll see that starting in football this fall, which I'd love to nothing more than to end the year going to a bowl game.
Yeah, for sure. And we need to ask you about football because, I mean, you're at every single game. You've been at almost every single FIU game. Yeah. You know, and since they started, I believe, in 2002. And, you know, you're one of the big reasons why we see Kiwan Jenkins throwing touchdowns to these guys today. You know, take us through that story of you flying over. I think he's mentioned the Orange Bowl. And then, you know, at some point, you got to show us that one of the original helmets.
The helmet, sure. Well, what happened was that in the 80s and early 90s, when you said the word FIU football back then, you thought it was an April Fool's joke. Yeah, come on, stop it. FIU football, come on now. Stop kidding around. Obviously, the vast majority of students, and to an extent, the folks down the street were winning titles, right? They were the talk of college football for many years. So here's this upstart in FIU that doesn't have football. Our students wanted it. I wanted it. I was alumni director by then. And the administration was a little bit concerned about starting football back in the mid-90s, because Miami had gone through their problems, Thug U, and all the issues they were having that was affecting their reputation of their academic level of the university was being affected. Despite winning, they were getting a reputation by some of the behavior, right? So our faculty was concerned about that. So there is one great classic Orange Bowl game between the University of Miami and Florida State. One of those Saturday afternoon, one of the famous wide right games. Yeah. So what happened was it was on ABC, and back then, again, this is before 9/11, when you can fly a plane, as you remember, you know those planes you see down the beach that advertise a club in South Beach or something? Back in the day, you can fly those around a football stadium and just advertise, right? So had I done it with Alumni Affairs funds, in other words, my funds, President Mitch Medik at the time, who was the president of FIU, would have fired me, right? Because we didn't have football. So I called one of our wealthy alums that lived in New York, who was a big sports fan, and I told him, "Listen, we want to make a statement about this. I'm looking. I found out that there's a plane that will fly a sign for 2 hours around a University of Miami game. So what I scheduled it was the last hour of tailgating, first hour of the first quarter, and I said, will you pay for it? So again, it can be traced back to me. Okay, that would have been fired, right?" He goes, "Yeah, I'll pay for it. How much is it? $300, I'll pay for it." He pays for it. It flies around, and the sign said, very simple term, FIU football still undefeated. Obviously, still undefeated. We had no football. We had never lost a game, right? So that flew over the over the Orange Bowl for 2 hours. The next day after that game, which was a highly televised game, a packed Orange Bowl, Monday morning, I go back to work and I start getting calls at the office from alumni and people in the community. I start getting a call from the president's office, from the chief of staff for Dr. Medik, and from Larry Lunsford, who was a student government vice president back in the day. And I go, "Do you know anything about this plane that flew around the Orange Bowl?" And I'm saying, "I don't know what you're talking about. I've heard the same thing. There was a mention in the Herald about this plane flying around." So the Herald mentioned it. So after 3 days, we had gotten over 700 calls in those three departments. So I went up to my boss, which was the late Paul Gallagher, Dr. Gallagher, who was a great, great man, a wonderful advocate for FIU. And I told him, "Hey, Paul, what else in the state of Florida would cause that much of a reaction than college football?" And he goes, "Yeah, you're right." Mind you, Dr. Gallagher was a graduate of Penn State, so he had seen big time Big Ten football. So about a year later, we formalized the original FIU football committee, which I was a part of, and the rest is history. The rest is history, and we got football, that type of stuff. So it's just one of those great stories. By the way, I leave the university back to the private sector in 2002. I never admitted that I did it because, again, I would have been fired. I run into Mitch Medik, President Medik, early 2000, like 2004. I'm already done. I'm in the private sector. I'm back to being a booster. And he sees me at an event, and I come up to him. I go, "Hey, Mitch. Hey, Eddie, how are you?" I go, "Good, good. I just want you to know that I remember the plane that flew around the Orange Bowl?" He goes, "Yeah." He goes, "I did it." And he goes, "I knew it was you," and that type of stuff. They all kind of admitted. We can never pinpoint it to you. But yes, it was me. That was me.
Do you know if the plane ever got on TV by chance?
No. That one did not. It just got a mention. The Miami Herald used to do a really good job of covering big-time college football. Obviously, Miami being in town, and they were winning. They were relevant back then. They would get full page coverage, and they had a segment of their article that said strange sightings, and in strange sightings, an airplane flew by saying FIU football still undefeated, and that kind of like that got more attention. So we got a little bit of attention.
All righty then. So there have been so many numerous memorable moments that have transpired in the world of FIU football that you've been a part of. Like you said, you've been there since the beginning. So,
yeah,
you know, we'd love to know what you remember about them, as well as any awesome stories that you can recall. So let's start off with FIU's first ever football game on August 29th, 2002, when they dismantled St. Peter's.
Dismantled. I mean, by the way, mind you, again, I don't know what the level of what St. Peter's was, but the year before, St. Peter's had won 10 games. If you guys knew, they were a 10-game winning team that the year before. Obviously, being involved in that first game, I was very emotional, not just because I love college football and I love FIU, is I had fought for that program. I mean, I was right next to Coach Strzok in Tallahassee when the legislation said, yes, approve football for FIU. I was right next to him. And then his first words to me were, "I'm going to go sign our first player." Our first player was a guy named David Tabor, which was a backup quarterback in the first team. And literally walked out after congratulations from all and went to sign David Tabor, who was from Tallahassee. So I mean, those were moments of history. By the way, David Tabor signs at his high school. It was a basic, picnic table. There was no dressing of it, of FIU. It was just signed here. I mean, we had no camera. We had no picture of him signing. I mean, it was one of those things that things just happened. It was just one of those moments. It was history. And then obviously that game at St. Peter's, as I'm walking around the stadium and I'm walking around in one of the VIP, my all-time favorite Miami Dolphin. I'm a big Dolphin fan. I've had season tickets since we went into Hard Rock Stadium. Is Dan Marino. And I'm walking around and as we're in the tailgate tent, Marino walks in, and I thought, you would have thought I had seen God or something. I was like, I couldn't believe Dan Marino, who was a donor, who was one of our football founders, was in our game. I mean, phenomenal. Wow. Great experience.
And by the way, to capitalize off of that, because it's very convenient, you mentioned Dan Marino.
Yeah.
This was my dad's media credential for that game, and look he got to sign it right there.
He
wrote it down. Phenomenal. Oh yeah, that's Dan Marino, who he got the signature from on his media credential.
Okay,
Kevin, I think I've showed this to you before.
But. Hey, Jake, I'm gonna have to top you on that one. Okay, I'm gonna have to top you on that one. So obviously, Marino, my all-time favorite Dolphin, right? Absolutely. Don Strzok and I, which we became real good friends. Imagine, he was a first coach, and he was. Officially, before we can name him a coach, he was director of operations, and I was director of development for football. So I was in charge of raising money, getting the football founders, and that type of stuff, whatever. So he knew, not only was I a big Dolphin fan, I was a big Marino fan. Him and Marino are real tight. He's the godson of one of Marino's sons, Don Strzok is, right? So Marino came over to visit at the football offices. Mind you, the football offices were trailers. This is before we had the field house. Our football coaches were in trailers, right? So his secretary, Don calls, I had his secretary call me, goes, "Have Eddie Kundell come over here." I said, "Okay, he must have called me. He wants to, whatever, go over some strategy for fundraising, whatever." So I come from across campus. I was in the, my office back then was in the PC building, which I guess is called now the Charles
Perry building. Right?
Yeah, Primera Casa was, I think, in the Perry building now? No, whatever. Well, that building. Well, so I'm in that office. So I go over to the football trailers And I see a secretary smiling when I walk in, and I walk into Don's office. In Don's office, Dan Marino's sitting there. And for the next 2 hours, we talked nothing but football, Dolphin football. And I was a typical fan. Hey, Dan, I remember when you threw 3 touchdown passes with Mark Lane. Just the 3 of us chit-chatting for 2 hours. Wow. One of the great moments that I'll never forget.
That's
phenomenal.
That's amazing.
Phenomenal.
We need to talk about another moment in FIU football history. Maybe not the greatest, not the worst, however you'll take it. But we got to talk about 2006.
The brawl.
Unfortunately, they went 0-12 that year, unfortunately. Yeah. But there was the infamous brawl, which FIU was down, I want to say, 0-6 in that third quarter.
They had just scored their second touchdown. It was 7-0 in the third quarter. And they had just scored their second touchdown. Miami's never been known as a quiet team. And there was chippiness. It had been chippy all night. As a matter of fact, Greg Olson, the guy that went on to have a great career in the NFL, he was a tight end, I guess. We knocked him out on the first play of the game, gave him a concussion.
Wow.
Okay, first play of the game, we clocked him, and he was out. He was done, right? But that so the whole game, Antoine Barnes was unstoppable. They couldn't stop him. He was living in their backfield. It was a tight game. They score the second time. Their player, whoever scored, I don't even know who that is. I mean, whatever, starts mouthing off to our student base. See, several mistakes were made in that game. Number one, the game was a night game. We started tailgating at noon. Students from both schools had been drinking all day. Yeah. The stadium was rocking. There were over 50,000 people. And I'm saying half of those fans were FIU fans. It looked like when you get FSU or Florida would come into the Orange Bowl, that was half Miami, half Gators or half Seminoles. That game was half FIU fans, right? And I think one of the mistakes made in planning for that game, was that the FIU students were put next to the UM students. So there was already a lot of talk in the stands. There was a lot of talk in the field. And it was just simmering. It was simmering, simmering, simmering. And when that guy scored, making it 14-0, 13-0, when they went for the extra point, our guy leveled or punched the kicker, and it just went sideways real quick. And one of the most incredible things I'll never forget about that night, outside of the loss of control from both coaches, was the fact that we had Miami police horses. The police officers had to come into the field in horses to divide up the both teams because it was out of control. And then they end up kicking, 14, 15 of our guys out and only 3 of the Miami guys out. And even though we might have been the initiators of the fight, because we were, they weren't innocent bystanders either. They were as much part of the fight, of the brawl, as we were. So if they're going to throw out 17 of our guys, they should have thrown out 17 of theirs, and they didn't. And then the game got away from us because the 11 of the 17 were starters. So right away, we were done for at that point. Because at that point, it was mid-third quarter, 14-0, and the game ended up being something like 35-0. 35-0. It's 35-0, and it should have been that because they had got rid of a lot of our key players. It was an unfortunate night. My brother, who was a Florida grad, that night happened to be a real big game for the Gators against Auburn, and they were breaking into their telecast on ABC saying, and in the Orange Bowl, a massive brawl has broken out. And my brother was calling me on the cell phone. I goes, I am watching this on ABC News. They broke into our game, the Gators and Auburn, to show that there's a massive brawl in the Orange Bowl. He goes, yeah, it's unbelievable. It was incredible.
Shout out Amon Ned, still a legend, just for wanting to take on the world in crutches.
In crutches, phenomenal. By the way, one of their guys who went on to the NFL was swinging a helmet, Merriweather.
I saw that, yeah.
Yes.
And he never got kicked out of the game. And he was swinging helmets at people, and he never got kicked out.
I guess you could have looked at it in the sense where they probably shouldn't have kicked anyone out until you saw more of the film and then, you know, more suspensions. But,
yeah.
I mean, how often is that even mentioned still, you know, till this day, 2006? Yeah. Do you still talk about it at any point?
Yeah, of course. Especially remember, you guys know my son David. who does all his FIU stuff as well, and is always and is a humongous advocate for the university as well. I mean, David was, David was 10 years old. So he was what, in what, fourth grade, fifth grade? And Danny, my youngest one, was in third grade. So they witnessed this firsthand. They were already football fans, and they saw that live, and that just, I got to, that made them fall in love with FIU football all that much more. That was one of those nights.
Yeah.
There you go. And I also want to ask you, I think we kind of spoke about it. It's on the trailer, 09 against the Gators. You guys did that little video with you and your brother, but take us, were you at that game?
Yes, yes. I went, as a matter of fact, Dave, we had a big alumni reception for that game. It was 09. By the way, I can't stand Urban Meyer. He ran up the score on us. That game was way over. Imagine. So we got to see one of the greatest college players ever. Tim Tebow was a quarterback. Yeah. He was a quarterback. That game was in hand. And Urban Meyer's having him go on 4th and 13 in a game that's like 52-3. and going for it on 4th and 13 and instead of punting. I mean, I don't think much of Urban. He's a great coach. I don't think of him much as a person. I'll tell you. David and his buddies from school and my son Danny and his buddies, we all went in a big group to the game. They had taken off their shirts and they had printed like Paws Up or FIU or whatever they put. They painted on the jet and they're screaming at the Gator fans, "We're going to shock the world." And I remember those type of just fun things and we had a lot of fun. That game was something. Again, we didn't win. We'll play him again one day, hopefully. That should be a fun. So my brother has his undergrad from Florida, his master's from FIU. My brother was also involved a lot with the Florida Alumni Association. He was their president for the Hispanic Alumni Association. So we share that in common for both schools. And he had always been a humongous FIU fan because obviously, you know, blood's thicker than water. I kind of support the Gators and he supported FIU. But for that day, it was a house divided. It was a one time we were going to go up against each other. The only way that would ever happen because my brother and I share affinity to the same teams. We like the same teams. So that day, so they made that video, that story about a house divided, a Gator and a Panther going up against each other.
And I want to talk a little more about some, you know, I guess the first for FIU, and that is 2010, which, you know, the team was co-champions of the Sun Belt, and then getting the first bowl victory in Little Caesars Pizza Bowl against Toledo. Talk about that experience to have two things. Yeah, T.Y. Hilton. What was like experience that?
So, obviously, it was the day after Christmas. We had to take a flight the day after Christmas. We went on a charter with a bunch of other FIU fans. That a lot of us that now root for FIU feverishly, I'm sure my 112 guys were there and along with many others. That game was special because we were way behind and literally T.Y. Hilton put us on his shoulder. Well, the thing is, it was a game of runs. We scored first, then Toledo scores a bunch, and then we come back, and that 4th and 17, that miraculous T.Y. Hilton, you know, hook and lateral type stuff that we did, that he got the first down. And then Craig Ellingson, who's had a great CFL career, gets another big gainer, and we hit that field goal. That is the first time I know for a fact. I know my wife and I were in tears. I mean, I had my eyes were watering. I mean, it was so emotional. I think David and my son Danny might have been crying. It was such an emotional, because it looked like we were out of it. It looked like we were done. And to be able to walk out of Ford Field, first ever bowl game, T.Y. Hilton made a statement for the country of what a special player he was and is, because I still think he was a great NFL receiver. By the way, my opinion, if Andrew Luck would have stayed with the Colts and not retired, and T.Y. Hilton would have stayed the way he was going, T.Y. Hilton might have been able to have numbers for the Hall of Fame. I don't think he doesn't have them now. He's a very good NFL receiver. He's a very good one, but not at that level. But had Andrew Luck, which him and Andrew were one of the top connections in the league, I think T.Y. would have had himself an NFL career. But, yeah, that game was phenomenal. Never to be forgotten. I still see the highlights when I need a booster. Every once in a while, having a bad day at work, I'll put in that Little Caesars highlight bowl and T.Y. taking it to the house on that kickoff. Phenomenal memories. And it was cold as heck. It was freezing.
Of course. It must have been,
Detroit in December. Never forget it. By the way, we were the only game on TV. The only game. There was no NFL game. And we were the first bowl, one of the first bowl games of the season. There was no other game to be seen. So the viewing of that game was great. And we got great. And could we go back to the branding issue we talked about earlier about UCF and all that stuff? The advantages of winning is what it does for the university. I'm sure the if you can measure clicks on people looking into our university after that night, it probably boomed.
Yeah.
Easily, 100%. Yep. And another bowl victory we had in recent time is 2018, where the team went to the Bahamas.
Yes.
With a, you know, now get another victory against Toledo. Anthony Jones had a great game.
Oh, my God, yes.
Yeah. Unbelievable story. But talk a lot, Bill, about that. Another bowl.
Well, victory. Remember that game? We were with our backup quarterback.
Yeah,
for sure. Right.
Okay. Christian Alexander had played very little throughout the season because James Morgan, who was a great quarterback, really, really smart guy with a phenomenal arm, got injured. And he couldn't play. So you're flying to the Bahamas going, oh, my God. And Toledo wasn't a bad team. Our two bowl game victories have been against Toledo, the Irish. And Christian Alexander had himself a game. Anthony Jones had himself a game. Again, another back and forth. The stadium was kind of great because it was kind of a soccer field, track field type thing. People were getting in late from flights, and they were just letting him come into the game with their luggage. One of my fraternity brothers, J.C. Alexander, I literally got there late at the beginning of the game, didn't even go to the hotel. He literally walked into the stadium with his luggage and went to the – we have pictures of him holding his luggage like this at the game saying, you know, like, I'm here, you know. And so people were walking in, FIU fans, with their luggage into the game.
Wow.
Phenomenal experience.
Jake, pull up the GIF of that game.
Yeah.
Oh, if I can find it, the one that you're in, the one of the popular
yes.
gift that
they well, use that's on my, social. That, by the way, David, Danny, myself, I think is Mike Hernandez and Mike Mayer, other FIU zealots that were there and part of that gift. Yes, yes. And I'm sure you look up in the history of that game, there's a picture of what the guys holding up the luggage. They literally, what stadium in the U.S. would allow you to walk in with luggage?
None.
You got to walk in with a clear plastic purse. Nothing. These guys were walking in with luggage. It was phenomenal.
Which one did he like? Which bowl win did he like more? The first one?
Well, the first one is something special because it was the first one. That it was explosive. I mean, we fell behind, way behind, and we showed heart. I think we were a more athletic team than Toledo. Toledo had a better structure. But there you go. There's a gift. There you go. Yeah. Oh, by the way, you see the flag? There it is. I'm always, whenever I travel the world.
There it is.
There it is. Look, there it is. There it is. Whenever I travel, I'm blessed that I can travel a lot. My wife and I travel a lot. And one of the things I do, this little flag goes with me anywhere. So this has been Australia, Europe, you name it, South America. Wherever I travel, that flag goes with me.
And putting the I in international, I see.
Oh, yeah, of course. And I do it in like the most I embarrass my wife all the time because I will take out that flag where there are the most people. And I'll open it up and go, take a picture. It goes, oh, not again. And people are like, what the heck? But oftentimes I've had to explain what FIU is. But it's even nicer nowadays when people recognize what FIU is. People have come up to me all around the world, more domestically. And they go, wow, FIU, yeah, I have a friend or my brother or that type of stuff has a connection to the university. They know what it is.
That's awesome. So let's transition to, in my personal opinion, you'll probably agree, the biggest win in program history for FIU football, 2019, over at Marlins Park, when FIU took on and defeated the Miami Hurricanes on their hallowed grounds of the Orange Bowl.
Did you say Miami Hurricanes or University of Coral Gables Hurricanes?
Kevin, do the thing.
Because Sage Lewis taught me how to say their new name, UCG. Sage Lewis is the one that told me you called it. So for me, they're UCG. And until they play us, and maybe beat us, maybe not, they will always be UCG to me. Because why? Because we're the kings of the 305. So, yes, that game, even though that wasn't a good Miami team, UCG team, sorry, it's still impactful because not only did we beat them, we beat them on the site where they build their history 34 years before.
Absolutely.
Okay? That was the Orange Bowl. That was their place. By the way, reminder, the last college football game won in the Orange Bowl wasn't them. It was us. We beat North Texas. Okay? Mm-hmm. That was the last college victory for a local team in the Orange Bowl. Because when they played after we beat North Texas, UVA beat them like 48-0. So we were the last victory in the Orange Bowl from a Miami team.
Yeah.
So another reason we're the kings of the 305.
Amen to that. Oh, man, you're getting me so fired up, Eddie. Now, this is lights out, man. This is
lights out. Lights out.
So what do you remember, by the way, about the atmosphere of that game? Because there were a ton of Canes fans all around.
There were noisier in the beginning. There were noisier in the beginning. Listen, I've been able to go. Here's the thing, and I don't know if it speaks to, but I've gone to many. I mean, I went when FIU played Penn State. I've been to Maryland, Duke, Florida. I've been to UCF away games. I've never been called stuff by other fans. I mean, it's kind of like you're a visitor, man. Some of the I go decked out. You know, FIU. I was wearing a big straw hat, FIU straw hat, to the game, and you know, I show my pride. I make sure I let people know who I'm rooting for. Walking into Marlin Park, man, they were screaming some stuff to me that I said, you know what? Maybe that's sometimes the reason their fan base isn't always welcomed by other team, because I mean, I've never been screamed at by any other fan base like they were screaming to me in that game. And then the fact that we won, oh my God, phenomenal.
Kevin, this was before your time, but this was one legendary day, Kevin.
Yes.
You were there too, Johnny, right?
Yep.
I was there. Yeah, I was there.
Yeah. And when Anthony Jones broke that last run, I realized at that moment it's over. Because they kind of made a little bit of a run, even though we had dominated the entire night. They scored late, and it looked interesting that it was closer. It looked closer than it actually was.
Yeah.
We had dominated. And when Anthony Jones broke that 30-yard or so run, I realized it was over, and I realized, my God, that we had finally beaten them. I think we might have sold our soul to the devil in that victory, because then we didn't win another FBS game until Coach McIntyre took over and beat New Mexico in his first year. I mean, we went through a drought, but man, that night was special.
Would you like to see them go up against each other again?
Yeah. I mean, I wish if it happens, maybe not like this year, I would like to build our foundation a little bit more because I, you know, and hopefully, you know, having players like Jenkins and now having Flex back, which you know they're going to be attractors to all the local talent, mm-hmm. and we start building a base locally where, you know, you start building some depth and we guys start winning, you know? I mean, my baseline for this year, we talk about this year's team, my baseline of wins this year has to be six. It has mm-hmm. to be the baseline six, and six puts you in a bowl. I don't care. I've told my friends this and they laugh. I don't care if it's a Sedano's bowl. I want to go to a bowl game this year. You know, and Amen. Then build from there, and then build from there, and then next year you take the next step. And I think I feel comfortable, and I'm very hopeful that come the holidays, that we're the four of us are. I'm seeing you guys at the game, and I'm asking you, hey, where are you staying for the bowl game? I mean, I want to have that conversation with you guys. You know, and I think that should be our baseline. The baseline should be six wins.
For sure. Yeah, no, and usually for year three, it's
year three
where Mac takes teams, you know, to the next level. We saw it with Colorado, and we saw, I believe, San Jose State. And,
Well, and fair to Coach Mac, he was dealt a pretty tough hand when he took over. Yeah, first of all, he was hired late, the cupboard was pretty bare and kind of destroyed. He's had to build a lot of that. So let's see what happens officially year three. So let's see what happens this year. I'm looking forward to it.
Kevin, is it time for a news break?
Let's do it.
News break 45 minutes in. This is my news break where we take a look at all things FIU athletics and just FIU in general. So let's start off with men's basketball about a story we talked about a few episodes ago. We had announced that Asim Jones, a guard from the College of Southern Idaho, made a trip and verbally committed to playing for FIU men's basketball. Today, it's been confirmed, and Kevin posted this earlier today, that Jones has officially signed with the team and will play for the Panthers in late 2024. As mentioned earlier, his ability to score and attack the rim should make him a reliable replacement for Arturo Dean and what will likely be a relatively new-looking roster overall. So congratulations to Asim Jones, and of course, best of luck with the Panthers this upcoming fall semester. Let's move on now to women's tennis, as they are going to have a very busy weekend here in the 305. Before that, however, Ekaterina Kyrodinova was named the Conference USA Player of the Week for earning a straight set victory over that team from Boca Raton, the FAU Owls, including a 4-1 comeback. So the tennis team will begin their road to a Conference USA title, nationally ranked, of course, as they take on the UTEP Miners tomorrow at 10 a.m. at the brand new and improved tennis courts here at the 305. Lastly, the FIU Wellness and Recreation Center has recently received an upgrade with the addition of a brand new functional training area. The new space was designed for holistic fitness and will be made in part with the assistance of the SGA. The new area features Airdyne bikes, rowers, Bulgarian bags, plyo softboxes, pace clocks, and even more equipment, along with a completely rebranded look. Much like the rest of the rec center, students who live on campus can check it out at no extra charge. So something to keep in mind if you're a student at the rec center. That was your look at Newsbreak. So let's get right back into this talk about football, Eddie.
Let's do it.
The modern day look of the Panthers. The spring showcase was only a few days ago now. We got to see a little bit, just a sneak preview of what the 2024 FIU Panthers will look like. In your eyes, you had mentioned Jenkins and Flex Joseph. Aside from them, what else are you really interested to see about this team?
We need to get Jenkins more protection. I think we need the O-line. Imagine last year they had injuries and they were a little bit thin in the fact that they were young. We were at the spring showcase and I was with my 112 guys were with me, and the smarter one of the two Artola brothers, which is Lloyd, agreed with me that they look bigger. Chia, on the other hand, did not agree with me, and he said the reason they look bigger is that we were smaller, in reference to my age. So
there you go.
So, but to me, they look bigger. Now, what happens is I think we have a very talented running back room. I think we have a very talented QB1, and you need to protect both of them. So you got to give Jenkins a little more time to throw and bigger holes for Flex and Shamari and all those guys that be running through. I think will make an impact because and then hopefully with an established offensive game, the defense isn't always on the field and they're not exhausted at the end. So I think the O-line is going to be very important. Who replaces Chris Mitchell? And let me ask you guys that. Who replaces Chris Mitchell? I know we signed a really big receiver who's like 6'5". What is he? Washington or something? He's like 6'5", 220. I mean, I want to see, does that become our go-to guy now? He's big enough, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to go back to – and, Jake, you're probably going to be best to tell me this. 2019, I think, is the best year to look at, where they had multiple guys being distributed the ball. I don't think there's a clear number one guy, but if I really had to choose, I love what I've seen from Dean Patterson this spring.
Yeah,
Dean Patterson. Those two guys have been really good. They've already been adjusted into the offense. I think we'll see someone like a DJ Washington more in the 50-50 type scenarios because it's not going to be a Chris Mitchell where he's going to run by you. He's going to grab – football's above you. So we're going to see him used a lot more in the red zone, I think, more of those packages. I think it's a really good tool to bring into this team. You know, 6'5", lengthy guy. You don't see that too often in wide receivers, especially today. I mean, you usually see that in a tight end. This guy could be a tight end if he wanted to.
Yeah,
but you have him as a wide receiver. So But if I had to choose right now, I would have to say it's either Eric Rivers or Dean Patterson as your wide receiver one. But man, if there's one thing FIU's been able to produce, and Eddie, you could probably speak to this, it's the wide receivers.
Yep.
T.Y. Hilton, you look a couple of years back, you had a couple other guys out there. Tyrese Chambers during his time. Mitchell's going to be an NFL guy at some point. Yep. And you look now, I mean, they're bringing in guys. You know, you brought in this Georgia Tech guy, Juju Lewis. You're bringing in more guys. And it's credit to Jay McIntyre. He's done a great job developing these guys. And, the freshmen that are coming in.
So you think he'll be a receiver by committee? He'll still be – to see who establishes himself as number one. Juju Lewis is what, from Georgia Tech, right?
Yeah, Georgia Tech.
Yeah, we'll see. Good. So, I mean, again, you see, hopefully it develops. But the crux there is the O-line going to be more protected, because Jenkins is going to need time. I mean, he's got the goods to make things happen. And I think he will.
Yeah.
By the way, we got to take a quick break from our planner, because Eric Henry, take it away, Kevin.
Eric Henry, let me tell you something. If Eric would be live here on the show, I told him something last time I saw him. I go, listen, don't make plans for New Year's, because FIU will be the G5 representative in the New Year's Day Bowl as we beat up on your Texas Longhorns and shock the world. And he told me that he would secretly be rooting for us.
There you go. You ought to answer his question. The all-time FIU.
No, Eric Henry. I mean, we've had a couple. We've had a couple of good ones that I we had a guy early, phenomenal, Pete Pellegrin, who worked for the Herald and used to write as much attention as he could to us. Eric Henry's been the man, though. What he's done the last few years, his commitment to our university, and he embraced us, and he did phenomenal work. And he's not just a friend. I think he's a phenomenal writer, and I think he does. I follow his stuff in Texas because of him,
Pause up podcast legend, by the way, a two-time.
Yes.
Two appearances.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, he's been great. Eric is by far one of the best beat writers out there, and he was great for FIU.
Everyone informed.
I do want to ask you, how did Section 112 become a thing?
You know, it's funny that you're going to have to ask Chia and Lloyd and Danny Dennis and all the guys that make up that group, but they're a phenomenal group of fans. They will tell you how they feel. Whether you want to hear it or not, they're going to tell you how they feel. But you know what? I go back to my original statement. You know, being the older guy, I was here when I was the only one yelling, okay? To have guys like that, every team needs guys like that. You need fans like that all the time, right? So I really enjoy hanging out with them and talking. They know, they're so knowledgeable on the football program and whatnot that I learn a lot from them. But the more numbers, they're strength in numbers, right? So the more people we get to be like them and be that fanatical, where whether you're 112 or whatever, you just get engaged, because it's not only a lot of fun, it's our team, it's our school. You know, my time here in Treasure, go to FIU. Why would I wear anyone else's colors? They did nothing for me. But we bust ops on the folks across town. Why would I wear their colors? They've never done a thing for me. So I'm gonna root for the school that was there for me. My career has been successful. What I did at FIU as a student. So I'm going to give them my attention and my time. I'm not going to give my time or anything to any school that was not there for me. I just won't do it.
Yeah.
And I really want to talk to you about, Eddie, is just now the future and the present day of FIU Athletics. And obviously that starts with, the man that runs it all, Athletic Director Scott Carr, who has done so much great things with trying to increase the FIU brand and promote the athletics as a whole. Talk a little about what you've liked so far about Scott now, and really – what has been, 2.5 years that he's been here at FIU, really what he's done to really just change the way FIU athletics is.
Oh, well, shouts out. I mean, Scott Carr has been a godsend for us. And I say that because there's no secret here that I was not a fan of the prior administration. I think the prior administration was there 15 years too long, in my opinion. So I was not a fan. And I'll tell anyone that wants to hear it why I'm not a fan. But looking forward, when we hired Scott Carr and my first conversation with him was I realized we had the right guy in charge. I mean, and all he's done is done nothing but a lot of positive things. Now, it takes time. You know, when you plant a seed, it takes a while to get that full grown tree, right? Yeah. So you're hoping, and by the way, not every seed grows, right? So I would want Scott Carr to bat 1,000 in everything he does, in everything he does. It doesn't always work that way. And at the same time, he's inherited. So it hasn't been his full ship yet. But from what I've seen so far, and the attention he gives the athletics and the energy he brings and his engagement with alumni, with the community. Oh, my God. I mean, night and day. I couldn't be happier.
Yeah, no, definitely. So, all right, Eddie, as we start to wrap up here, let's do some fun rapid fire questions as we usually tend to do. And let's start off a question we haven't asked in a while, but I feel like you're the perfect guy to ask this to. Who is on your FIU Athletics Mount Rushmore all time?
Wow. Can you give me the criteria? Is it got people that were just good at FIU? Or good FIU and then went on to be professionally very good. And I'll give you the reason why I say that. Coley was a phenomenal basketball player for women's basketball, led the nation in scoring, but didn't have a successful WNBA career, right? Andrea Nagy, on the other hand, was a two-time All-American and had a phenomenal WNBA career. So yeah. I would definitely put like Andrea Nagy on my Rushmore.
The criteria for this Mount Rushmore is based on what they accomplished at FIU specifically. Can be a player, can be a coach, past or present.
Oof. Okay. Andrea Nagy, I would definitely put her on.
All right.
Mike Lowell was not only an academic and an All-American at FIU, again, a multiple-time All-Star in the MLB, an MVP All-Star, MVP winner at the World Series. Obviously, T.Y. Hilton. Hilton. He brought a name to FIU. Pat Bradley. Pat Bradley was the best women's college golfer in the U.S. and is a Hall of Famer in the LPGA. So
there you go.
I go old school because I'm old enough to these greats. There's a lot of them. We go four, right? Mount Rushmore's four.
Yep. Yeah.
So Andrea Nagy, Pat Bradley, Mike Lowell, T.Y. Hilton, man, with a lot of others, if I could add, smaller heads, look at our backcourt of Carlos Arroyo and Rajah Bell. We had two NBA guards playing at the same time that beat Michigan, a good Michigan team, never led in. And I was at that game for men's basketball, never led at that game. We even had players come to our game. Watch that game, and we beat them because we had two phenomenal ones. So a lot of guys, I would love to put them as well, and other players. But you can only put four, so I put those four.
Okay,
love it. So I think this is the best question out of all of them. Would be, what's the better name for the FIU program, the Sunblazers or the Panthers? And you were there for both.
I was 2 years of Sunblazer, 2 years of Panthers. Imagine. And by the way. Originally, we weren't just a Panthers. We
called the Golden Panthers.
Yeah, it'd be the Golden Panthers. Look. Obviously, with the branding of the Panthers, awesome. I think it looks great. I think we have one of the nicer logos. I like the Panthers. I've gotten used to the Panthers. It has a great look. I do like it. But the Sunblazer, there is no other Sunblazer in the U.S. There's multiple Panthers. There had never been a Sunblazer. And by the way, do you know why we were called the Sunblazers?
Nope.
Okay.
Enlighten us.
When FIU opened its doors in 72, the administration goes, listen, we're going to have sports teams. We got to find a mascot. And across town, they were called the Hurricanes, which is a negative weather force. So he goes, we got to come up with a positive weather force. And we're in Miami. Let's do something with the sun. Dr. Blucher came up with Sunblazer. They had a contest for students back in the day, early 70s, to draw up a possible mascot. And they came up with, by the way, his name is Son of a Blazer, was his name. SOB. So that was his name, and that's how we came up with Sunblazers to offset the negative energy of a hurricane.
Nice.
So I like Sunblazers.
You learn something new every day.
Yeah, it was different. We were the only ones, but I mean, I can live with the Panthers also as well.
There we go. I got an interesting question. This is a fun one. So obviously, you know, you went to FIU. If you had to pick a dining restaurant that you wish that was at FIU when you were there, what would it be? I know there's a lot of dining options, but which one would you pick when you were a student?
So we had no restaurant, just a cafeteria when I went there. And I love walking around campus now. I have all the choices. Man, if they would have had a cajeta. if they would have had, man, I love Italian food. If we would have a non-UM Big Cheese with the FIU branding instead of their branding, I would take a Big Cheese. I like their food. Even though I try not to eat there, but I get a rash.
With all this all memorabilia.
Yeah, so I order, take it out, hold my breath, pick it up, and go home. So, and by the way, when I go there, I'm wearing this all the time.
Oh, amen.
To make sure they know. So, either good Cuban food or Italian. I'm a big Italian food guy. I love it.
All right. Well, you had mentioned this before the show began. I feel like we need you to show it off. The prototype blue FIU football helmet. What's the context to it, and how do you have one right now?
So after we flew the plane flew, energy picked up. We create a committee. The late Dr. Gallagher, tells me, hey, listen, we need to get some sketches of helmets. I literally call Rydell. And I go, listen, we're looking to start football. Can you send me some prototypes? He goes, what are your colors? And obviously, the reason we had to use this yellow, which is different than our gold now, was that the Florida Panther hockey team didn't want us to use gold because it infringed on their logo. Back then, their owner was Wayne Huizenga, and he wasn't a big fan of FIU. So he made us go with his light yellow. So I called Rydell. They sent me a light blue helmet, a red helmet and a white helmet with nothing on it, by the way, even though I sent them the logos. I had to get these stickers. I put them on. So I've got the blue one. I think the white one is still in the president's office currently for Dr. Jessel. And I would say maybe the late Dr. Gallagher's family still has the red one. So there are only three made. So these were the first three helmet prototypes ever made for FIU football.
Wow.
I saw you have more helmets too.
The what? Oh my God. Jeez. Are you kidding me? Hold on. I've got my man Danny Moss that makes these phenomenal helmets. I got this one. I got so many of them. I got this one, obviously. I got all the little ones, that stuff. So yeah, I collect as many as I can, and they go into our family's man cage. And I want to make sure anyone that comes into my house, they know exactly who we're rooting for.
The
front of my yard has 3 yard banners, garden flags, Dolphins, FIU, and I do have a Penn State because my son went to Penn State. And over the garage, a very large, as big as this one flag, flying over the garage. So everyone in my neighborhood knows exactly who we're rooting for and makes no illusion that I'm rooting for anyone else.
I love it. Do you still talk to Don Strock?
I haven't seen Don in a long time. I think they brought him back for a game a couple of years ago, and him and I had a nice chat when he came back. I think he still works, my understanding, for the Miccosukees. He handles a lot of their marketing and golf stuff because he was always a great golfer. He was a great hire because his name brought attention. We got several founders. I was responsible to get founders because how Don and I were a tag team. I'd go out to banks and donors and ask him for money. I'd bring Don with me. Why? Because these donors may not have cared much about FIU, but they love the Dolphins. They love the Dolphins doing Shula. And I would bring Don, and Don would do all the Dolphin war stories. They'd fall in love. We'd make the pitch. And we got, man, back then we had like 25 football founders, which at the time was, I think, 50 grand each. And that's how we got started. With FIU football.
Did you guys have the – well, now it's the FIU football stadium, but that was the, that was on campus back then when the
– It was that stadium, but it was a high school stadium. And then what happened for that first game was we had to rent portable skyboxes that were literally put on lifts and put above that the one of the sections. And we had to build staircases up to the portable skyboxes. Air conditioned, they were phenomenal. They were great, but we didn't have anything permanent until we built what we have now.
All righty then. This is a fun question we always ask the athletes on the show. It's if we could who should be the next player or coach we invite on the show next from that team. In your case, Eddie, who should be the next member of Section 112 that we invite on the show next?
Well, do you have the opportunity to bleep out bad words? I just wonder because they're the 112 guys may bring in a little coarse language, but if you can handle that, Chia or Lloyd, oh man, there's so many good guys in that group. Danny Moss, I'm blanking out on the names, but any of those guys are good. By the way, another old timer like me that can give you perspective of history is a guy named Robert Valcarce, who, by the way, lives in Puerto Rico. His whole business empire is Puerto Rico, flies in for every football game.
Wow.
Will fly in for basketball games and big baseball games. This is a true, true savant of FIU sports. He knows it all. As a matter of fact, we're in a chat together. Now that you signed his basketball players, you guys announced a little while ago. Yeah. I got on that chat. I go, hey, Robert, any information on this guy? Because if anyone will find, he's on all the recruiting things. He'll tell you all the 411 on all these guys that you announce, and he's a phenomenal fan, and he's one of the old timers like me.
How did you meet Eric Henry, and how has that relationship been? Because
so obviously when Eric started covering the team, I got to know him. Then Eric and David did the Shula Bowl podcast.
Yeah,
and the Shula Bowl podcast, they were the hosts, and that's where we really became close, because at the time we would have one guy from FAU and David from FIU, and Eric would be the moderator between the discussions, right? So it was really, really good. I mean, it was a fun experience. I got to know Eric well. Phenomenal guy, top notch work. The best. Again, I said not because he might be on the show and he may be listening now, but he is the best writer we've ever had. And we've had a couple of good ones, and I put Eric right in the Mount Rushmore of beat writers of FIU. Eric is definitely stands alone there.
Eric, if you're still watching, we love you. And I know you're still watching. So, alrighty then, Kevin, Johnny, you got any got anything else for our special guest today?
Johnny, anything on your end, bro?
You're muted again, Johnny. Again,
there we go. I was going to say,
Before we get off, can we predict what bowl game we're going to go to this year?
Ooh. I would love Bahamas Bowl.
I would love to go
Is it still a thing? Didn't they stop it? Didn't they stop the Bahamas Bowl?
Well, for it's, 1 year because they're renovating. So I think it's going back to the Bahamas again.
Kevin wants the Bahamas Bowl. Jake, what do you want?
Bahamas Bowl too. I want to go to the Bahamas and watch a football game. Are you kidding me? That sounds super awesome. But, I mean, the Cure Bowl in Orlando would also be good because it'd be a pretty quick road trip up there to watch them. So I'd be down for that as well.
Okay, Jonathan, how about you? What do you hear mine? How about you, Jonathan?
Ooh, I mean, there's so many. I would say the one that's in New Orleans looks like a fun one.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
I forgot the name of it, but that's one I would.
Are you ready for mine?
Yeah.
Okay, yes. Dreaming. Remember one thing, dreaming is free, all right?
Okay.
Dreaming is free. So I would like nothing more, because I know members of the Orange Bowl committee, for FIU to be that G5 school that makes it to a major bowl. And I would love nothing for us to stay home and play a Power 5 team, because I would say this. Do you not think that if that were to happen, because obviously at that point, we're a discussion point in the country, right? Because among college football, hey, there's that Florida International school like Cincinnati was a couple of years ago.
Liberty.
A couple of schools have done it, right? That do you not think if we were to be placed in the Orange Bowl here locally, that place would get packed with FIU fans. And it will come out of the woodwork, because we know about Miami one thing. We're an event-driven city.
Yeah.
We're an event-driven town. You would even attract people who didn't even go to FIU that want to be part of what's happening at FIU. So that's my dreaming is free dream, is to go to the Orange Bowl. And play so Eric Henry has to come visit us.
There we go. He should come soon. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me top you. We should be an Orange Bowl of Miami versus UM or UCG.
UCG, you mean? UCG, I don't know who UM is.
That would be something.
Oh, they'd have to get a lot of security for that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, the security would be insane.
Oh, man.
That would be great.
All righty then, Eddie. Again, we can't thank you enough for spending, over an hour just talking with us about FIU athletics. And again, as we always do towards the latter end of the show, if you have anything you want to say to the fans, to FIU, to anyone, the floor is yours.
Well, I would say this to all the Panther brethren or Sunblazer brethren, being that I'm a little that I could reach out to the older crowd. Get involved with your university. I know it's easy to follow an established team. Pick your Power Five team of choice, but there you tend to be another brick on the wall. You're just another one of many fans. Where at FIU, you're part of building a foundation of support. When you look at all those teams that people like to root for because it's easy, that was built on a foundation of folks that are doing what you guys are doing, what the 112 guys are doing, what all of us that are involved, whether it be my Siget brothers or anybody else from anywhere trying to build up FIU. It took a group of us to get involved. Get involved, make a difference. The winning will come. The winning we will see, and it'll make it all the much more fun because it is our university. It's our school, the one we love. Paws up, all of us.
Absolutely. So, all righty. Again, Eddie, thanks so much for spending some time with us today.
Thanks for inviting me. A pleasure.
It was absolutely our pleasure. So. Again, we're going to have another awesome episode lined up next week. Already got a guest. Should be a good one. And, we're getting closer to football season. So
keep
an eye out for some football articles and other football content. So
look forward again, to it.
For Kevin, for Johnny, and, of course, for Papa Panther, I'm Jake Gibson saying so long and pause up.